This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's well known what happened in the Kanawha Valley on January 9th, 2014. A massive chemical leak into the Elk River left tap water unusable for 300,000 West Virginians for up to 10 days. The 2014 legislative session had just begun, and in response, lawmakers passed a bill that would require all above-ground storage tanks in the state be registered and regulated under the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Over the next year, tank owners began to grow frustrated with the regulations. And in 2015 legislative session, lawmakers reevaluated the bill. Senate Bill 423 was approved on the final day of the session and made some considerable changes that take effect today. As part of our occasional series, Effective from Passage, Liz McCormick introduces us to two farmers in the Eastern Panhandle who were among many frustrated with the original legislation and hope the new bill will be better.
So, Doug, tell me about this farm. Just give me a little bit of an idea of where we are.
We call it Ripon, West Virginia, and it's just a rural agriculture area, the south part of Jefferson County.
That's Doug Stollifer. He and his son Mark are cattle farmers in Jefferson County. Mark was one of many farmers who were frustrated with the original tank bill. He says it heavily regulated farmers who were already under regulations with the Department of Agriculture. He owns a 9,000-gallon diesel fuel tank on his farm.
I generally order 2,000 gallons at a time, and we burn about 7,000 gallons of diesel fuel a year. And by buying it in the larger quantities, I get a better price on it and everything. So I like my larger tank, but with the regulations, you know, 1,320 gallons is as large as you could be before you fell into the regulations, and you can't manifold them together. So each tank, I'd had to have a couple, two or three tanks, and each tank would have had its own pump in it because you can't hook them together. Because once you hook them together, it combined capacity went the gallon threshold for the regulations.
Mark says it would have been cheaper for him to purchase those smaller tanks rather than pay the regulation fee to the DEP and have his 9,000-gallon tank inspected routinely. But at the same time, he says he still would have lost a lot of money because he wouldn't be buying that fuel in bulk anymore.
It started out they were exempt, and then the exemption was taken out through the legislative process. That was the whole push for this new legislation in order to address that and exempt farming.
That's Senator John Unger, a Democrat from Berkeley County. Unger oversaw the writing of the 2014 bill as the chair of the Legislative Oversight Commission on Water Resources, a commission created in response to the chemical spill. He says Senate Bill 423, the bill approved in 2015, amended and reworked the first bill so farmers using tanks for agricultural purposes would be exempt again. But he says other rules were placed in the new bill as well. The 2014 legislation would have required all above-ground storage tanks in the state be regulated by the DEP if they held 1,320 gallons or more of liquid, were 90% or more above ground, and were at a fixed location for at least 60 days. It was estimated to affect as many as 80,000 tanks used in a variety of industries and for a multitude of purposes. All tanks were registered and all tanks were regulated. Now that rule has changed. Scott Mandarola is the Deputy Cabinet Secretary and Director of the Division of Water and Waste Management with the DEP. He says under the new law, there are two levels owners of tanks need to worry about. Everything else only needs to be registered on the DEP's website.
This is important because regulated tanks are only tanks that are either level one or level two. Level one tanks are either in a ZCC, greater than 50,000 gallons, or contain a hazardous substance, and level two tanks are tanks in the ZPC. If you're a registered tank that is not either a level one or a level two, then all you are required to do by this new legislation is register your tank.
ZCC stands for Zone of Critical Concern and pertains to tanks 5 hours upstream from a public drinking water intake. ZPC stands for Zone of Peripheral Concern, which is as far as 10 hours upstream. But Senator Unger says he's concerned the new legislation won't protect everyone.
Now we have legislation that protects major metropolitan areas. But the vast majority of West Virginia, they don't live in major metropolitan areas. They live in small rural communities. And the question is, are they protected? All we're doing is protecting the municipalities, the cities, and the towns. The smaller communities that still own well water, they're not being protected at all, and their water supply is not being protected.
Senate Bill 423 goes into effect today, but all tanks must be registered by July 1st. Mark, the cattle farmer, says he's happy the new bill exempts agriculture from the regulations, but he says he wishes things had been thought out better down in Charleston.
I think the state needs to regulate the really hazardous materials, the class, whatever they call them, the class one or everything, they need to be regulated. The fuel side of things, I don't feel need, you know, they're not as hazardous as some of these other chemicals. So I'm hoping, you know, I hope we get a little bit of both. You know, things get eased up. They're willing to work with us and just throw something at us and get us all into compliance with everything and make everything safer.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
Step into any one of West Virginia's 11 craft breweries today, and you're bound to see a bit of a celebration. That's because a new law goes into effect that brewers hope will drive more business their way and expand the state's growing craft beer industry even further. As Dave Mistich reports, and again, for our series Effective from Passage, there are big hopes for Governor Tomlin's Senate Bill 273.
There's little question that West Virginia's craft beer industry has taken off in recent years. The number of breweries has more than doubled from 5 to 11 since 2011, and a bill passed this legislative session brings hope that there's even more to come. Here's Paul Gatza of the Boulder, Colorado-based Brewers Association, a trade organization that promotes the craft brewing industry across the country.
West Virginia is one of the smallest states for craft brewing. Right around 8,000 barrels a year is what West Virginia has been doing, which was up from 5,000 the year before. By percentage, it's growing rapidly, but that's off of a pretty small base. But we're certainly seeing that beer drinkers all over the country, including West Virginia, are turning more to craft brewed beers, and they're enjoying all the flavors and beer styles that they're finding out right now.
According to the Brewers Association, West Virginia's craft brewing industry raked in $118.2 million last year. That figure puts the state 46th in the nation as far as revenues and 49th in production. Greenbrier Valley Brewing Company is one of the newest breweries in the state. Co-owner Will Laska says his company's growth shows there's plenty of potential to be tapped.
Well, we started selling beer last September of 2014. And we started off in kegs, and of course, you know, things are slow. We have 12 distributors in the state, and we cover about 50 out of the 55 counties. You know, are we saturated? No, we're far from being saturated, but we're working, you know, getting in more places, getting the brand and the name out there more and more. It just, you know, it just takes time. It just takes getting out there, doing the marketing, getting the word out there, talking to people, and also having the laws beneficial to small businesses, small breweries.
And the statewide growth in recent years has come despite laws that brewers say haven't been exactly friendly to them. Aside from the run-of-the-mill business license, there was a $2,500 fee for a resident brewer's license and a separate $1,000 fee to operate a brew pub. In addition to all the licensing fees, there were some limitations on distribution. Laska explains what things were like before today.
Prior to the law coming, this new law coming to effect, someone could not come to the brewery itself for a tasting. The only thing a brewery could do, was allowed to do, is, you know, you could self-distribute, you can go through a distributor, or you can sell kegs for off-premise consumption.
But now tastings and samplings are allowed. The brewpub license fee gets cut in half, and the resident brewer's license fee will become a sliding scale based on volume of production. And while these changes will certainly help those looking to start their own business and increase the ability of the state's current brewers to grow, there's a few provisions in the craft beer law that will help benefit both the brewer and the consumer. Beginning today, craft beer drinkers will be able to purchase and fill more growlers at brew pubs, and they'll also be able to get growlers at bars and some other retailers. All of this means more access for those interested in starting a brewery, which translates to more competition, something current brewers see as a way to attract tourists, and the state's tourism commissioner agrees. Amy Goodwin hopes the new craft beer law will attract visitors, and she sees plenty of potential for future growth of the industry.
I think it's a great beginning to something that's only going to get better. I joked with a reporter the day that we signed the craft beer legislation in the Capitol, and he was counting all of the dots across the state of the craft breweries. And I said, I bet you this time next year it'll be double. That's what I said. And I really do believe that because the momentum's there.
And that momentum has motivated Governor Tomlin to proclaim a statewide craft beer week slated from August 15th through the 22nd. Several craft beer festivals will coincide with the week, including the sold-out Rails and Ales in Huntington, the Mountaineer Brew Fest in Wheeling, and the Brew Skies Festival at Timberline. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:54. Partly sunny skies today. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 80s to low 90s. Scattered rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 60s. And partly sunny on Saturday with a chance of scattered rain and thunderstorms. Highs in the 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by WVU Children's Hospital, serving the health care needs of all West Virginia's children, located in Ruby Memorial Hospital, online at WVUKids.com.
A professor of linguistics and English at WVU is working to map West Virginian dialects or accents. Kirk Hazen was in Wyoming County earlier this week collecting interviews from the locals. Jessica Lilly, also a Wyoming County native, tagged along.
My name is Ginger Smith, and I'm from Pineville, West Virginia.
I'm Pete Colasurto. I'm from Mullins, West Virginia, and I'm 20 years old.
Smith and Colasurto sit next to each other at the end of a large table with two microphones perched in front of them. Three reporters, including myself, are recording and paying close attention to the conversation. The couple agreed to take part in the study after an invitation from a WVU student, Jordan Lovejoy, who's also a Pineville native. Lovejoy and her English professor, Kirk Hazen, sit on the other end of the table asking most of the questions. These two interviews are among about 65 that Hazen and his students have collected across West Virginia since 1998. He's the director of the West Virginia Dialect Project.
I study language variation, both dialects today and how language has changed over time.
Hazen says he's hoping to show people how language works. It's no secret that Appalachians often carry a thick accent. Hazen says another part of this project is to counteract the negative stereotype that often comes with the Southern drawl.
The language we use, what we grow up with, is part of who we are and part of our identity. And that's something that needs respect. And having a Southern accent is something that should be allowed in workplaces. Having an African-American accent is something that should not be seen as bad. And if you sound like you're from West Virginia, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Hazen says the project also builds lessons for schools to teach students that there are a variety of accents and dialects throughout the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jessica Lilly in Pineville.
And the conversation about West Virginia accents continues on Inside Appalachia this week. Tune in Sunday morning at 7 or Sunday evening at 6 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Hitmakers Toad the Wet Sprocket made their first appearance on Mountain Stage near the beginning of their career in 1992. They returned 22 years later to perform some of their most beloved songs, including this favorite, which is the Mountain Stage Song of the Week, Walk on the Ocean.
We spotted the ocean, the head of the trail. And where are we going? So far away. Somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe. Walk on the ocean, step on the storms, fresh becomes water, wood becomes bold. Half an hour later, we packed up our things, said we'd send letters, and all of those
the same.
Toad the Wet Sprocket with Walk on the Ocean. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.
Step on the store.